All right. Well, welcome to August 2022. Geez, it's amazing how much time flies. This session is going to be all about fear. And last year, I kind of went off on a tangent and started talking more about Zen. Of course, this is the Zen of fear. And one of the subscribers said, I thought this was going to be about fear or all about fear. And so I've definitely been working towards making it more and more about fear. And I thought, well, is that limiting? And I realize it's not, because so much of our lives is about fear, and we just really need help on this subject. And usually when I get questions submitted, it's about fear. It's all about fear. And so there are two questions that were submitted this month, and I'm going to start right in with those questions. And before we get started, though, I'm going to, with the questions, I'm going to read a quote, because like I say, every month, every time I see something that feels relevant for our monthly calls, I make a note of it and I refer to it. So I made a note of this quote by Helen Keller. It's about optimism. She said, the test of all beliefs is their practical effect in life. The reason why I'm, just to cut into her quote a little bit, the reason why I want to make these at least somewhat all about fear, and certainly this month's all about fear, is because the practical effect that it has on our lives is profound. I would say that having a healthy, flowing relationship with fear is the most important personal work you can do that has the biggest practical effect on making your life just so much easier. So, Helen Keller, back to the quote, the test of all beliefs is their practical effect in life. If it be true that optimism compels the world forward and pessimism retards it, then it is a dangerous that it is dangerous to propagate a pessimistic philosophy. So basically, she's speaking about the virtues of optimism. And I think that we all agree that most of the language and teachings about what to do about fear has a pessimistic view about fear, that it's just this horrible thing. But if you have an optimistic view about it, that it's actually a good thing, just know that that is what leads to having super practical effects in our lives. So, wanted to start with that quote. And now I'll go to the questions. Two questions were submitted from the same person. And the questions were regarding the four-step method, the four-step art of fear method, which you all should be familiar with. He wrote, if I do the second body scan, so if you remember, the four-step art of fear method is it's normal and natural to feel fear. Second step is the first body scan. What am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? How strong is it? The second body scan, which is what this question is about, is what is my relationship with my fear? You know, am I in resistance to it? So back to the question, if I do the second body scan to sense my resistance, how can I be sure that's my resistance and not another form of my fear sensation from the previous step? And he wrote, I had moments when it was not so obvious to me if it is the discomfort I am feeling or the resistance to it. And I love this question because I'm surprised it hasn't been asked before. Because how do you tell the difference between fear and your resistance to fear? Because they both feel uncomfortable. And the short answer is it doesn't matter. Discomfort is discomfort. You know, it's just whether it's fear or whether it's resistance to fear, it doesn't matter. It's just all discomfort. Now, the longer answer is in step three, the resistance is often fear of fear. So, because of that, like if you think resistance, like resistance is fear, like I don't, you know, I want to get away from this thing that's scary, for example. You know, like fear can help you resist something, for example. Now, you can do either then in step three is which is don't try to figure it out. Like it just doesn't matter. And just come up with whatever sentence is that appears that kind of captures your reaction to the fear. And this is what I do. This is making it as simple as possible. Like for example, if I'm about to give a speech, I feel fear. I feel uncomfortable. I'm about to give a speech. It's normal and natural. Where do I feel it? Oh, it's nervousness in my chest. What is my reaction to the fear? You know, I don't want to feel it. So just come up with a sentence without trying to understand it. Otherwise it can get really, really complicated. Just come up with a sentence. I don't want to feel this. And so step three, I would just be intimate with, I don't want to feel this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to feel this. And I just spend some time having that thought or kind of merging with that sentence. That's what I do. And it's very, very simple. Or the other thing you can do, which I actually recommend if you're new to this practice, which is you can figure it out. You can kind of go over the flight list, which I'm going to have Amy put up if she can, or you can go over, you know, flee, fight, or faint. Like, am I fleeing this fear? Like, have I come up with a coping mechanism to not deal with it? Like, I'm drinking alcohol or I'm taking sleep medications, which is a way to flee your fear, because fear is usually what's keeping you up at night. And if you take sleep meds to sleep, that's a way of fleeing your fear. Am I smoking pot? Am I exercising a lot? Am I avoiding doing the scary thing? Like, I'm just not going to give the speech, or I'm not going to say yes to the speech. Or do you fight it? You know, do you fight the feeling of fear by trying to control it, or replacing it with calm, or letting it go, rationalizing away, like using your mind like a sword to rationalize it away? Like, oh, there's, I got this. Everybody's going to love me. Like, there's nothing to be afraid of, or I'm going to be able to ski this no problem. Or, you know, everybody has kids, or I should just marry this woman because, you know, she's wonderful. And you're just trying to fight the feeling of fear. And that's a fight reaction. So this is if you do try to figure it out. Like, step three, am I fleeing my fear? Am I fighting my fear? Or am I fainting in front of the fear? Like, am I going numb? Am I checking out? Am I just going completely stoic and brain dead, right? And then we can also go over the flight list, which, Amy, if you, you know, we could go over these as well. And some of the items on the flight list is obvious that it's either fight, freeze, or flee. And others, it's not so obvious whether they fit into these categories. And then after all of this, like, let's look at this flight list and like watching TV, that's fleeing fear. And it's also kind of fainting and, you know, or freezing, you know, just zoning out. Like, what would be shopping? That would also be kind of, let's see. Shopping is like running away from the fear. So I see that as fleeing the fear. Let's see, getting confused. What is that one? That's definitely freezing under shutting down at the top. Getting confused right at the top there. So if you go through this list, some of them will be really obvious. Like, what are what are your resistance patterns? Now, of course, watching TV, that's not a sign of resisting fear. But if you watch TV all the time, that's a sign of resisting fear. Shopping or eating obviously are not signs of resisting fear. But if you overeat, if you're addicted to shopping, then that's a sign that you're not dealing with your emotions in an honest way. So know that you can probably compartmentalize all of these things on this flight list under either fight, flee, or freeze, but some of them you kind of can't. Like, rehearsing might, you know, if you look under getting busy or analyzing, if you're just over analyzing or rehearsing, not the fear itself, but maybe if you're about to be in a play and you're rehearsing, it's a way to minimize fear. It's a way to, you could make an argument that that's a way to fight fear or flee from fear or limit fear, but it doesn't really fit neatly under any category. So I would suggest that if you are trying to figure out what your form of resistance to fear is, go over the flight list and think about it in terms of, am I fighting the fear? Am I fleeing the fear? Or am like coping mechanisms, or am I freezing in the face of fear? And I think that that can go a really long ways into helping you understand better what you're dealing with. Okay. So let me, I am trying to figure out how to get back to my list. I am so lost on these computers now. All right, sorry, somehow I got muted. All right, so basically, in step three, you want to come up with a sentence of some sort. You can either come up with a sentence just by keeping it simple, simple, simple. You know, what is my reaction to the discomfort of the situation or the fear? Or you can spend a bunch of time in the beginning where you come up with a sentence based on, figuring out your unique pattern and relationship with fear. And I think that it really goes a long way to come up with at least in the beginning, your sentence based on more of an inquiry of what exactly it is that you do regarding fear. Like, what is your long habituated pattern regarding fear? I think that will go a long ways. Okay. The next question that he submitted, and this is what I was looking for, is my fear type is paradox. And paradox means that he has both a loving, inclusive relationship with fear, and he also resists it at the same time. And my favorite resistance pattern is to freeze or act stoic. However, I do engage in fearful activities from time to time, like skiing, learning to surf, or improv theater. Especially with the latter one, improv theater, I recently noticed that there are moments on stage where, although I am fully present in the beginning, but I feel like suddenly I am in a tunnel feeling numb and I am running on autopilot, just reacting. Now, I do this kind of theater, improv theater as well, so I know what he's talking about. It's when you're up there and you're just trying to be funny and you just turn into an idiot, right? So often it is when there are the most crucial moments in a scene or when trying to catch a wave. He's now talking about surfing. Unfortunately, the way I act then is not towards accelerated achievements, more the opposite. I miss the essence of the scene or get smashed by the wave. So basically, he's saying that when he gets in a little bit over his head and things get a little intense, then he just checks out. So he writes, I guess that I get overwhelmed in these situations and freeze or go numb, which is definitely happening. Any ideas on how to better deal with these situations? Last time before I show, I used the art of fear method. However, I still had one moment where I was in the tunnel and I was not able to handle the situation. Okay. So he's asking about, like, how is the art of fear going to work for you when it matters? Now, for me, I'm going to answer this question. My old habit in skiing was to ignore skiing, or sorry, ignore fear. And I still find myself doing that when I do the comedy improv classes. Like, I just kind of go a little numb. Now, Old habits die hard, right? Is there a better way? Absolutely. Of course, there's a better way. But the thing is, I don't really have a problem. I haven't ever had to get on stage. I'm just taking classes. And if I did a lot of improv, and if this happened while I was on stage doing a performance, that would definitely become a problem. And so, and it sounds like he's on stage. And so he winds up having it turn into a problem. So, to answer this question, then, for people for whom they're doing things that it becomes a problem, and it, you know, like if you're surfing and all of a sudden you have a big wipeout because you're not handling fear properly, or you embarrass yourself in front of an audience, of course it's time to get to work. Now, sometimes it takes a while, especially if you have a long history of having your unique resistance pattern, which of course you've identified by looking at the flight list or looking into fight, freeze, or flee. So sometimes it takes a while to retrain your habit to be more inclusive, to have a more positive or optimistic approach to your fear. Now, some people I work with them and it's one and done. Like I've had a couple clients. I had a client that lives in California that I worked with that was having panic attacks and had insomnia and social anxiety, and I worked with him very briefly. He literally did the 4-step art of fear method once, and it all of his problems were gone. And then I have another client, he's a new client, who has insomnia issues and a crippling insomnia, like hadn't slept in 3 months when I started working with him. I'll talk probably more about him later because he's so interesting. I worked with him for 45 minutes and he got the first good night's sleep that he had in 3 months. I mean, he was chronic panic attacks, crippling anxiety, couldn't even leave his room, suicidal, like thinking he was just done with life because he just couldn't sleep. It was just such torture for him. 45 minutes later, he slept great, and he slept great for 3 months until all of a sudden he had a big day coming up the next day at work and it came back. And he called me in a panic and said, "Hey, you know, it came back, you know, last night." And I'm like, "Well, you have to always remember, it's not like, even if you're one and done, even if this is a fast remedy, these 4 steps, in the end, you're still going to have fear come back in your life again and again and again, especially if you're taking risks and doing big things with your life." Now, what I recommend to the person that asked this question is, I don't think for you that it's one and done. I think for you, it needs to be a little bit of a longer practice. It sounds like you have a really, really ingrained habit of checking out and going stoic in the face of your fear. And if you're listening and you didn't ask this question, you may not be one and done, which is why you may be on these calls with me every month. You know, the two people that I just mentioned that it was one and done, they're not signed up for these calls. They feel like, "Oh, yep, got this done. Check that box," right? So more than likely, if you're still on these calls, then it's important for you to better identify your resistance pattern and really luxuriate in step three of the Art of Fear method. Now, back to the first way of dealing with it. You know, I don't spend some time when I do the 4 steps luxuriating in step three. I just identify my sentence of like, "Oh, I don't feel like feeling this," right? That can be done too. And then going back to step two, leading to step four, which is just feeling your fear once you're done with that, is you don't need to necessarily know what your resistance pattern is the second you identify it. It could change. But just to simplify things, let's also simplify, you don't even need to know what your fear is. Like you don't need to know what it is that you're afraid of. And it's quite honestly, and I've been meaning to bring this up with you guys for a while, fear very, very, very rarely manifests as afraid or scared. And back to the question too, if you try to figure it out, you're going to just get really confused. Like I think this person was just trying to figure it out and getting really confused. And half of your fear, I would say, half of, actually, I would say the majority of your fear is your unwillingness to feel fear, like your fear of fear. And so, if you really want to simplify this four-step method, is what I'm trying to say, is simplify your understanding of resistance to just that list. And also, don't try to understand where your fear is coming from. Don't try to understand whether it's resistance or whether it's fear. The only thing that I want you to do is just feel it. And the only thing ultimately I want you to do with the resistance is just feel it. Why is it important to feel fear? And this is where we're moving away from the question and the questions that were submitted and just kind of now melting into why we're all here on these phone calls in the first place. And I do, with respect to these questions that get asked, and maybe you guys don't submit many questions anymore because I've really driven this home again and again and again. It's really not that important to understand anything. It's only important to feel. So let's go back to fear rarely manifesting as being afraid, right? As we've learned, sometimes it manifests as excited or just being present. Usually it manifests as some form of discomfort, though. You know, for most people, it's probably just more an uncomfortable sensation than what I'm describing or what I felt during my ski career. So I want to give you three examples of why you don't want to try to figure it out. And for me, I want to give a divorce, my divorce example for my own life. And why I didn't try to figure out what I was afraid of. I could have figured it out, like afraid of being alone, afraid of making it on my own, afraid of whether I was like bad in my marriage. Like I could have picked it apart. But for me, during my divorce, this is the first example, it was manifesting only as sadness. My fear manifests my whole life. I've never felt afraid. I don't think ever in my life. Maybe if somebody, you know, a snake, right? Like, okay, I'll give it that. But it's my fear almost always, 99.9% manifests as sadness, or maybe like confusion or frustration or just feeling upset. For others, fear can show up manifesting as anger, right? But that's just fear. So just know that oftentimes people that say that they don't have any fear, but they're super angry or they're depressed or something like that. That's actually their fear. And that's one reason why it's important to not try to understand your fear, because you'll just get lost in the process and get confused. A second example is that I had a client that was, as she wrote, she was afraid of sugar. And I thought it was an interesting thing to be afraid of, right? And that was the fear that was on the surface. And no, of course, once you start breaking it down, if you try to understand what that is, you're going to learn that it's something else entirely, like fear of getting fat, or beneath that, you know, the fear of rejection from others if you get fat, right? Or the judgment that comes from health conscious people that are judging you for eating sugar, or maybe a loss of core value, like maybe this person's number one core value is health. Right? Or maybe this person's number one core value is status, and you lose status if you have a belly on you, right? And on and on and on. So the fear may be tied to your core value. It may have something that on the surface, you know, is so deep down, so much more, you know, true. But if you dive down that rabbit hole, you could get lost in that process forever. The third reason why it's important to not try to understand what it is you're afraid of is a client that I had in, here's the example, in New York City. She was a very, very famous doctor in a man's world. And she was an expert skier. And the more famous and the more accomplished she became as a doctor, the more fear she had while skiing. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so afraid of getting hurt. And so she was just digressing. I mean, she was a double black diamond skier, and all of a sudden she couldn't even ski blue squares without being pickled in fear. And of course she hired me, and it's like we could dissect, like, why are you afraid of getting hurt? Oh, it's because then I couldn't work and I blah blah, you know, like, but really what it probably comes down to is that she's not dealing with fear in her work, and it's tripling down when she goes skiing. And so you could just get lost in that process forever, trying to decipher where this fear is coming from. And you guys have heard me talk about 11 million bits of sensory data per second. Like, which of those 11 million bits of sensory data is the thing that's making you afraid right now? You're just going to drive yourself nuts trying to figure that out. And all this, all these examples contribute to why trying to figure out like what you're afraid of, it takes a lot of time and energy. And it's a rare moment that people actually even get to the bottom of what they're afraid of. And it's, so I don't recommend it. I mean, it's going to make it, your therapist rich, right? But here's the last part. Even if you did figure out what you're afraid of, what purpose would that serve? Because it doesn't get you one iota closer to not being afraid of the thing or of having less fear. Like understanding, like, okay, I'm afraid of rejection, right? Doesn't end that fear in any way. It's kind of like understanding the universe doesn't get you one iota closer to controlling it or changing it, nor certainly ending it, right? And why would you want to? It sounds like a lot of work. Another example of why this can be futile, you know, like, for example, understanding why your father, if he's a jerk, is the way he is, doesn't help you control or change him. You know, we have this belief that if we can understand something, then we can control it, right? But we really get that wrong, thinking that understanding will lead to control, like understanding the universe will lead us to controlling it. I mean, maybe a little bit, like, oh, we can figure out how to blow up an asteroid, but, you know, there's another asteroid right behind that. So understanding as a way to control, as a way to deal with a difficult universe or a difficult father or a difficult emotion or whatnot, I just don't recommend it. It's just a huge amount of effort, right? And doesn't really get you even one iota closer to what you want. Now, I vote if you understand, though, your reaction to your father, like your reaction to the universe, the reaction, your reaction to your fear, right? Only to see if it's in resistance to it, if it's not a flow reaction, like, okay, I'm in flow with the universe, I'm in flow with my dad's craziness, I'm in flow with my fear. You know, what does that look like, right? And oh, look at that, I'm not in flow. So back to the original question, the resistance, step three of the four-step art of fear method. If you try to understand too much, right, you get lost in that process forever. And I just wanna simplify it as much as possible. So when it comes to discomfort, you just wanna simplify it, like, oh, I don't wanna be around my dad. Right? Oh, I'm not in flow with the universe. Oh, I haven't been feeling my fear. I've been in resistance to it. So a long way of saying, right? Simplify, simplify, simplify. Understand your resistance patterns in the beginning, but from there on, just simplify. So back to Helen Keller, and I'm going to read her quote again. The test of all beliefs is their practical effect on life. So my belief is that we want to simplify here, right? Can you see that that's a lot more practical? Because you're not in your head so much and you're just feeling your emotions instead. Like, just want you guys to feel. I want you to feel your resistance and feel your emotion. The test of all beliefs is their practical effect in life. If it be true that optimism compels the world forward and pessimism retards it, then it is dangerous to propagate a pessimistic philosophy. So can we control fear? No. We can only control the prism by which we view it, from pessimism to optimism. Like, instead of understanding like your dad, you know, what I might do, like my dad was very, very difficult. Or understanding fear, fear is probably easier. Just thinking, having the thought, yeah, fear's got my back, right? Maybe the optimistic approach that you can have to your father is, okay, I can't understand him, I can't control him, but yeah, he's doing the best he can. Right? This is not about trying to change your relationship with your father. If you're just having an optimistic approach, then you don't try to change anything. And if you have a different approach or a more optimistic or a better view of your father, it might change how he treats you. Just like having an optimistic approach to fear and speaking about fear in a positive way, which is what I teach, it changes how fear treats you. Same with the universe. If you have a belief that the universe is out to get you, that's one experience. But if you have a belief that the universe is here for you and it has your best intention in mind, then you'll start to see that happening more often, right? That the universe is working for you, not against you. And just to conclude with dad, right? If you can't change the nature of your relationship with dad by changing your perspective or way that you view him, and he continues to be toxic, of course, get away from that toxic person. But with other things like the universe or with fear, you can't get away from it. They're permanent roommates. These are things, and I hate to call them things, let's call them people, right? The universe, fear, that you have to work with. And it just goes so much easier if you simplify the relationship, not trying to understand these people, and you have a optimistic approach to them. And then you learn to feel your fear, because that's what emotion wants, and you learn to have intimacy with the universe, and just life gets so much simpler. So, breaking it down, and I'm going to give you a chance for questions in just a little bit. You don't try to understand, right? Maybe in the beginning, you're step three, resistance, just to get to know your patterns a little bit. Typically, resistance patterns are the same patterns your whole life. I will always ignore my fear when I'm not paying attention, like I do with the improv class. And if I started getting on stage and started doing improv where it matters, I better get to work not doing that, because all of a sudden I'll just go numb up there, kind of like the person that asked the question. So it's really, really important to really have a healthy, flowing relationship with your fear and practice the four-step art of fear method until it becomes your new habitual pattern and it becomes innate and you have intimacy with your fear all the time. And that's your default mode instead of your resistance. So again, this is the second step. So first step, don't try to understand. Second, kind of breaking it down, resistance, fear, right? There's really no need to differentiate. And I would say in conclusion to that, know that you just may be dealing with two layers of discomfort. Like you're wearing two jackets, and you have to kind of deal with the first jacket before you can get to the second jacket. And one is a feeling, that's the deep down jacket, and one is the interpretation of that feeling, which is more kind of what you have on the surface of your awareness. So one is a feeling, one is probably a thought, because more than likely any kind of form of resistance will wind up in your head on some level. And then the third thing to remember is that the only thing that gets you closer to having less fear, or rather, in this case, less discomfort, is a willingness to feel whatever is there, whatever is uncomfortable, a willingness to feel it. And the key is, the only way that you do this is through being in your body. And being in your body and learning how to feel only occurs once thinking stops. It comes from a no-mind place, which is what we explored a couple months ago. So simple, 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 just feel. Right? And deal with both layers, both the fear and resistance, in a simple emotional way. Just feel them both. And you do this in both layers, just spend some time with them. You'll have some awareness around them. They'll feel honored. They will feel better and relax, and thus you will feel better and you'll relax. And remember, though, not all the time. It's not one and done. Like, think of the client that I told you about with the insomnia. Like, it comes back the second you're going to take a risk. Big day at work the next day. Oh my gosh, I have a speech coming up. I'm having a baby. I'm going to go ski this mogul run. Like, just know that that doesn't mean that you don't feel good all the time. It's just an ongoing practice. That fear is always there and it's always going to feel uncomfortable. But now you're going to know what to do with it and you're going to be in flow with it in those moments. And you're not going to check out or go numb or stoic because you've been practicing, practicing, practicing and creating a new, better habit. Hallelujah. I want to call on one of our guests to comment on how this has worked for him in terms of calming his heart rate down. But before I have him do that, Michael, prepare yourself. I want to tell you one more reason that we should all be doing this that adds to it. And then I'm also going to finish with another reason. I mean, there's so many reasons, and I've hit upon a bunch of them, but also because the resistance feels honored and drops off if you do step three. And slowly over time, if you keep practicing the four steps, you become more in flow with your fear. The mega bonus is you become more willing to feel fear, which means you start taking more risks. And when you take a lot of risks, this expands who you are and what you're capable of. Like, you guys always hear me talk about, like, this is your comfort zone. And if you take risks, you step out of your comfort zone, you know, where there exists fear, but you're in flow with it. So it's no big deal. And then you connect the dots and you just expand who you are. And maybe you've heard me talk about that it's very expensive for the body to manufacture fear. It doesn't want to have to. If it doesn't want to manufacture it if it doesn't have to. And so next thing you know, not only are you feeling better, you're sleeping better, you no longer have the discomfort as much. You're having more of a conscious experience with your internal makeup from the four-step art of fear, but you become willing to take more risks, right? And you go to bigger venues if you're in improv, you ski harder runs. Those of you that have come to my ski camp know that this is true. And then, you know, you expand who you are, and because it's expensive to manufacture fear, the body doesn't have to now anymore. And what happens is you feel less fear, right? So this is another reason why to do the four steps, because even though the four steps is a school of no goals, no understanding, not trying to improve your life, not about will or grit or pushing through anything, certainly not pushing through fear, yet suddenly you feel better, you sleep better, but you also take more risks. So that's my big speech on why it's important to feel fear. And we're going to have one more before the end of the call, but I want to talk to Michael right now and have him weigh in on why it's been important for him to feel fear. And I had a session with him earlier today, and I said, oh, I'm going to put you in the hot seat. So, Michael, if you want to unmute yourself and you can talk about why it's important to feel fear and what your process has been.
Yes, thank you. My process has been over the period of time was doing the four steps out of fear, but I was always goal orientated. I have a high heart rate, a resting heart rate, due to I believe my divorce. But so I've been tracking my heart rate for the last couple of months, 6 months with an Apple Watch. So I kind of know exactly, when there's something going on, when it's changing. And so I was doing the art of fear. I think I was doing it right. But until I started doing it consistently on a daily basis and really without intention of any goal or lowering my heart rate, it's now started to adjust my heart rate lower, somewhere between about 30 or so beats per minute lower. So I was cruising about 135, just sitting in a chair. And now I'm down to 85 to 90. And it's starting to be consistent that way over the last few days, almost week period. So that's kind of exciting. But it wasn't really until I practiced the art of fear on a daily basis, not trying to achieve anything, but just feeling what was going on. And now I do it in the morning, I do it at night, I do it during the day. And I recognize when I can start. When I start feeling, just try to get into my body as much as possible and just let it be. Just not try to not try to manipulate it at all. Just let it be and feel what's wherever I feel. So it's been a big help, and I think that I'm very excited about the future now with trying to lower his heart rate, because it's a health issue. So thank you, Kristen.
Did you say 135 down to 85?
Yes.
Now, keep in mind, Michael wasn't doing it. You know, I was working with him, and I'm like, got to do the four steps. And then a week later we'd meet, and I'm like, did you do it? No. Right. So finally I said, don't do it for your sake. Do it for my sake, because I want to gather data for my next book. And so I had to give him a big nudge. So he's only been doing this for a week, like for real, for a week in this way, and doing it without a goal or agenda. And so to get that kind of result in a week is really cool. And the fact that it only takes a couple minutes a day. And I believe, and I don't know if you want to correct me, but the process for him is that his fear is in his heart, in his heart rate. And the fear, when it's trapped like behind a kinked hose, and it winds up going to wherever your weakest link is. Like if you have issues with your lower back, you know, that's where it will go and live in order to get your attention. If you're in your head all the time, then it'll go into your thoughts, and that's where it will live if it's trapped in your body, in order to get your attention, in terms of thoughts, like fear with an S, or insomnia. So with Michael, his fear was in his heart, in his heart rate. And so this practice, you know, could he figure out what it is he's afraid of? No. You know, all he knows is that his heart rate is 135 beats per minute, just sitting in a chair. Like, think about that. And just doing this practice, he doesn't need to figure out anything more than what is he feeling, and is he in resistance to it? Again, with the resistance, it could be interesting to figure out, you know, obviously he's ignoring it. Or actually, Michael, what do you think your resistance pattern is?
My two patterns, I thought I was ignore, and now I'm feeling it's a little bit wanting to control. And that's been, I kind of fell into that by my practice was to read over the Art of Fear steps each time when I do it. And then I noticed control popped, the word popped out. I was focused on ignore, because that's what I thought it was. But then control popped up. And I think I have one you can control. Seeing my family, and so it's impossible to see him, so I just couldn't do it. So once I realized that, hey, well, maybe it's control, and I sat with that for a while, and that started to loosen up things, and that's when I started to see change in the heart rate. And so I mean, and it's even now it's lower in the 85 to 90 range, which is significantly lower than it was. Even when I would sit outside in the sunshine and talk to Kristen on the phone, my heart rate just sitting there would be 135. And I figured I'd go outside in the nature, and I'd be relaxed, and I still couldn't make it move. So it wasn't until I did it consistently on a daily basis and asked for nothing from it, but just to feel, where I got results.
Yeah.
I'm getting results.
Right. And specifically, you were feeling your heart.
Yes, and I can monitor it, so I know exactly what's going on, because I have the Apple Watch, and it just takes the heart rate, so I can see in real time that something's changing. And now instead of looking at the heart rate, I'll check it, maybe I'll monitor it during the day, but I don't look to watch it, see if it goes down. I just ignore as the goal outcome and just feel what I'm feeling, and to practice being in the body and not in the mind. But when I go in the mind, I just accept the fact, oh, I went in the mind, now I'll go back to the body. I don't try to control the mind or the body, but just to try to feel.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Does anybody have any questions? Or does anybody have any specific issue in their life that they would like me to help them tweak their Art of Fear method to address that specific issue, like I did with Michael and his heart?
I'll go with one.
I did.
Hello?
Hi. Yeah.
Hi there. This is kind of just unfolding right now. I've got a friend that for a while she was my best friend, and things got a little over there. But I don't know how to respond to her. So I guess my flight list is to try to kind of minimize or stay in my head or try and figure it out and stuff like that. So I think she has a health scare right now, but I don't feel like I can really talk to her anymore. It's hard. So the thing is, I guess I would have an agenda. I would love to have that best friend thing back. and there was a time that we were really close and things just flowed and we didn't have an agenda. That just was our natural energy. And I am scared for her, and I'm sure she is scared too.
And who did you say this person was in the beginning?
She was somebody that we got really close. We didn't mean for that to happen, but we were just naturally best friends. She kidded me. She called me her brother from her another mother, and we just had this great energy together, and we're creative and fun. And it went too far though.
So you miss her. She's your friend, and she misses, and you miss her.
Yes.
And she's in her own lane doing her thing and dealing with her own fear. And then, I mean, you could decipher like what it is that you really are missing and
well, it's right now it's not about, I mean, she's got probably a serious thing that she's dealing with too. And I don't know if I can help her or just stay out of her life. I don't know.
Well, of course, how that relates to the four-step art of fear method. I'll lead us in an exercise at the very end of the call that might help. But, you know, obviously, I'm not a life coach, but if I were, I would just obviously say, reach out to her and ask what she needs. Like, yeah. Just a lot of men just try to fix things. And hopefully you already know that. And I'm not telling this to you for the first time, but I find
I do want to solve the problem. That's it.
You know? Solve the problem. And there's the problem of her health issue, and then there's the problem of you guys being alienated. And yeah. I find that just, you know, if I were a life coach, I would just say it goes a long way to reach out. And when people are going through a difficulty, you just ask them, what do you need from me?
Right.
And hopefully she will tell you the truth. Very few people will, right? Yeah. So sometimes you have to read between the lines. She might say, hey, I really need a friend right now, or I need some time to deal with this on my own. I just need to be alone. Don't reach out to me anymore. Like, who knows whether she'll tell you the truth? Hopefully she will. As for you dealing with whatever discomfort that you have, you know, your own pain, then, you know, where do you feel it? Step one, it's normal and natural to be upset if you've lost connection with a friend. Right. Step two, where do you feel it in your body, and what does it feel like? Like, is it disappointment? Is it loss? Is it sadness?
Yeah, I think I still pretty much go with the numbness.
Okay, I'm numb. So we're jumping right to step three. You can't even get to the jacket that's underneath the numbness.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's why step three, this four-step art of fear method is really all about step three. I have clients, they don't do anything except for step three for months, maybe even years. I have one client that's just in such complete and utter resistance to any discomfort, and she just can't break that habit. I've been working with her for over a decade, and she just keeps going back to that because she's addicted to the drama of it.
Right.
So anyway,
well, I'm not asking you to solve
it. Well, here's what you do. Here's what your four-step art of fear method looks like. And maybe we can simplify it even just to two steps. Okay. You know, what do I feel? I feel numb. So then sit and feel numb.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. No need to try to figure it all out, put the whole puzzle together. Just sit and feel numb.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Well, thank you.
And it's a conscious experience.
Yeah.
And it's consciously choosing to experience your numbness and not seeing it as a bad thing. Not necessarily seeing it as a good thing.
No.
Right? But right. just like it just is. Just yeah. let it be.
All right. Well, thank you.
Right. Yep. Have a numbness practice.
All right.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, then I may just take us on a journey of our final practice. Let's see, what time is it? You know, there's so many reasons why it's important to be in, I call it in flow with fear, but it's in flow with it all. In flow with being numb, you know, in flow with your racing heart rate, your heartbeat, right? In flow with your pain. And underneath all discomfort, yes, you'll find fear. But again, if you try to figure out what it is that's making you feel, is it something from my childhood that makes me go numb? It's just, none of that is necessary. Just whatever is there. And maybe the four-step art of fear method should be a two-step art of fear method. You know, see it, feel it, see it, feel it. Or if it's a thought, see it, think it. And that's the simplest we can be as Zen practitioners. And that's what monks do when they meditate in the monastery for 30 years. Oh, look at that, you know. And my practice with the four steps, though, is really focused on the resistance, because we're in such resistance humanity-wide with discomfort that, you know, of course, that leads to the numbness. But then we have to be in flow with the resistance. We have to be in flow with the numbness. It's interesting. That's the hardest thing for people to get. So I want to finish, we'll do the four-step art of fear method together, but I want to add like reason number 357, why it's important to be in flow with your discomfort. And this comes from the Flow Collective with Stephen Kotler. I read all of his emails. They're fascinating. And of course, I'm a flow specialist. He's a flow specialist. I'm in a bunch of his books. I'm in Stealing Fire. I'm in Art of Impossible. And so I just keep up on what he's studying, and he does a lot of scientific research on flow states. And that's why I find it fascinating, because I'm not very science oriented, but he is. So we're a good balance for each other. I think that's why I like each other. So this is a study that came through that he talked about. It's a 40-year study, 40 years at UC Berkeley PhDs, that demonstrated that emotional intelligence, EQ, is four times more powerful than IQ, like your intelligence, you know what IQ is, to determine your successfulness in your field of work. So EQ will make you four times more successful than IQ. So this is the study. The Hay Group studied on 44 Fortune 500 companies and found that salespeople with higher EQ, emotional intelligence, brought in twice the profits compared to lower to average emotional intelligence employees. So they measured it in points, the EQ, right? Every additional point in their EQ score added $1,300 to their annual salary. So employees with higher EQ scores earned an additional $29,000 on average per year than those with lower EQ. There's a study. I can send you information about it if you want afterwards. I won't go into the details. So emotional intelligence is a phrase that we hear all the time. Now, breaking down this study, the definition of emotional intelligence in the study was defined by a guy named Daniel Goleman, G-O-L-E-M-A-N. He's a psychologist, science journalist, and author of Emotional Intelligence and Altered Traits. His version of emotional intelligence in this study is this, and you guys have heard me talk about the standard emotional definition of emotional intelligence and then my version of emotional intelligence. So they were in this test measuring the standard definition of emotional intelligence based on this guy, Goleman. Emotional intelligence, he wrote, is the ability to identify, assess, and control one's own emotions oh shit, right? The emotion of others and that of groups. So breaking it down, emotional intelligence is the ability to identify your emotions, assess your emotions, right? We're talking about identifying, which is step two. Assess is understanding, which I'm not a fan of, and controlling one emotions, you know, I'm not a fan of that. Oh my God, right? And then not only your emotions, but assessing, identifying, and controlling the emotions of others, and assessing, identifying, and controlling the emotions of groups. So my head exploded, of course. When I saw this study, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then I'm like, oh shit, right? This is what they're gauging it on. So breaking it down, though, Goleman's conceptualization of emotional intelligence includes four core components. And Stephen Kotler's group, the Flow Collective, was writing this email and this sending out this information in order to sell coaching programs. So just put that into your filter as I'm reading this. So Goleman's conceptualization of emotional intelligence includes four core components. So basically, if you do these four things, you're going to make more money. So the first one is self-awareness. This is the ability to recognize and understand your moods, emotions, and drives, as well as their effect on others. The second one was self-management or regulation, basically the ability to think before acting. And then empathy, the ability to understand the emotional makeup of other people and the skill in treating people according to their emotional reactions. This is about like basically empathy and blending egos is the word that they use. It's not about your ego, but you know, kind of transcending your ego and being focused on more the egoic needs of the group or ego dissolution. And in order for you to get in flow with your client, basically. And then the social skills to weave them all together, basically the empathy, right? The self-awareness and the self-management. So basically empathy, self-awareness, self-management all together. And the focus was really on listening to understand rather than responding, which you've probably heard that before. Now, my interpretation of all this, breaking it down, there's still some value here, and we can interpret it and put it through our attempts to be in flow with our emotions. So, and how you can make money, basically. This is another reason to be in flow with your emotions, basically. And we can modify this study, and there's some incredible merit, and this is why I wanted to focus on it and talk about it. So if you are in flow with your emotions, there's room, this is my summary of it, there's room in your hose to be more in flow with others' emotions. I'm going to say that again. If you're in flow with your emotions, there's room in your hose to be more in flow with others' emotions, i.e. if your friend's going through a difficult time, you don't even need to be around them, you can have a lot of empathy for what they're feeling. Right? So similarly, if you could learn to honor your resistance to your fear, you then also can have empathy for other people's resistance to feeling their fear and honor their resistance. Like your friend, for example, she's probably terrified. If she's going through a really scary health scare, one that maybe is threatening her life, she may be in serious resistance to her fear, serious resistance to her pain, serious resistance to the potential for death and all of that. And she's probably pickled in fear, doesn't know how to deal with it. But if you can honor the fact that you can be that way sometimes too, then you can have more empathy for what she's going through rather than trying to get her to maybe get on these webinars or stop resisting or on and on and on. So basically, stay in your own lane. Learn to honor your resistance only. Learn to honor your fear only. And naturally, you will have empathy for others' resistance and others' fear. So my definition of emotional intelligence, as you guys know, is my ability to feel my emotions and have them help me come alive. Your ability to feel your emotions and have them help you come alive. And it's a very personal, internal experience. But if you take it external, you know, emotional intelligence can also mean your ability to feel others' emotions and have them help you both collectively come alive. And that's how this can serve you at work. If you have a career where you're in contact with clients, boss, colleagues, you have it, or even if you live in a place, even if you're a human and you interact with other humans, you know, by you learning to be more in flow with your emotions, you also have the ability to have empathy and feel into others' emotions. And together, if you have interactions with these people, they can, those emotions can help you both collectively come alive. So this week, I want yourself, I want you guys to give yourself permission to think just outrageously big, right? This month, actually, not this week, this month. And just by learning how to feel your emotions, just notice how that enhances your capacity to feel for others as well and include others' emotional flow as well. And what happens next is that solutions will just emerge naturally. And these solutions that emerge naturally are exactly what the world needs in 2022 and exactly probably what your friend needs who's really hurting right now. Any questions? Isn't that beautiful though? So let's do this. Nobody has questions. All right, let's do this together. So the thing that's bugging you most right now, either externally or internally, like, for me, it's my neck. I have vertigo from a car accident and years of Huck neck, it's called, from skiing. And it's just, and I just, by committing to do the four steps, I just became aware of it. I was just in denial of it. I wasn't even thinking about it. So just come up with a thing that is most upsetting to you right now. And let's do the four steps together. And then we'll kind of take it a little further at the end as well to incorporate others. So it's normal and natural to have this discomfort because fill in the blank. You know, for me, it's because I was a professional skier who used to jump off cliffs for a living. I have an incredible amount of hook neck, you know, and whiplash in my past. And now I'm dealing with the consequences. And, but it's also normal and natural to be sad about my aging body and complications that I'm now having to deal with that I haven't had to deal with in the past. So just do your thing, spend a moment in step one. Now, step two, what am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? How strong is it? And I could feel into my neck. It doesn't hurt, but it's just stiff and cranky. So I could do the four steps around the actual pain, even though it's not pain. But I think I'm going to do the four steps around my sadness, because I mentioned that fear for me shows up as sadness. And yes, I could figure it out, like I'm afraid, like, oh, at this age, like if my neck is already causing me vertigo, like what is it going to be like when I'm 80? Oh my gosh, right? And I could decipher what the fear is, and but I'm not going to do that. As I mentioned before, most of my fear manifests as sadness. I'm just sad. I'm sad about my neck. I'm sad about the vertigo. And my sadness shows up in my neck, interestingly enough. And I just had that realization just now. I had no idea. And it's pretty strong. So spend a time, some time with your step two? What do you feel? Where do you feel it? How strong is it? Suffering equals discomfort times resistance. So we're step two, identifying the discomfort. Step three, what is my relationship with that discomfort? Well, again, there's the relationship with the stiffness, and I notice it every once in a while, but mostly I just ignore it. I don't even know I'm ignoring it. And then my sadness, it's also in my heart. My sadness is also in my heart. And so I'm kind of doing it on two different things, the discomfort and my sadness around it. That's just naturally happened. And I am, it's with me all the time, I realize. And I just kind of ignore it. I have a long history of ignoring discomfort. So I'm going to just convert that to a single sentence. I don't want to deal with this. I'm ignoring it. I'm ignoring it. I don't want to deal with this. So I'll close my eyes and you just convert your resistance or your relationship to a sentence. Let's spend 1 minute in silence, just feeling into our sentence. Just going numb. You know, this could be your numbness practice, right, Dave? Just going numb, but consciously going numb, purposefully going numb, purposefully ignoring. Purposefully checking out for me. Notice if intimacy just organically occurs. I'm having conscious awareness of my checking out and my numbness. And this is a self-love practice. Boy, if you can have intimacy with your resistance, we could spend more time here. Maybe you want to, but for the sake of the group, let's move on to step four. Now just feel whatever else is there. And maybe the awful feeling was the resistance. Maybe we've already dealt with the awful feeling. I know I have. But what else is there? Whatever's left over, just have some intimacy with it now and just feel it. For me, it's showing up as tiredness, like just so tired of spending all that energy ignoring the fact that my neck is bugging me and I'm really sad about it. It's tied to my divorce too, and it's tied to some trauma that I experienced when somebody abused me and hurt my neck several years ago. I mean, I could decipher all of that. There's no need. Now I'm going to spend some time just being tired. Just whatever it is that comes up. Then let's do another step to incorporate what flow research suggests, which is now whatever you're feeling in your own life, feel for others. Like, I want to feel the sadness of others. I want to feel the numbness that other people feel. I want to feel how tired people are. And in many ways, this is saying I'm feeling their fear. Because fear can show up as tired, fear can show up as sadness, fear can show up as numb. It's the reaction to the fear, right? It's their fear of fear that leads to the numbness or an unwillingness to feel fear. You feel sadness instead. Or just the amount of effort that gets put into not feeling fear just makes people so tired. Just feel all that all. Feel it's an external, taking this four-step personal art of fear method and then adding a drop of empathy for the world and the fact that they all go through this too, and see what this offers you. You may even feel the burden. If you're one in 10 people are empaths, if you're one of those one in 10 people, you may actually feel the burden of other people's undealt with fear or tiredness or all that in your own body. So this also helps you still. It also helps you more deeply develop your empathy gift. It's 5:15, and so we're kind of at the end, but if anybody has anything they want to share about what that was like for them, the whole experience, or if they have any clarifying questions, I'll stick around and maybe we can keep recording until any questions are answered.
Okay, I think that what I got out of it was, I think I will just share with her that what feelings did come up, that I am sad and I don't know what she's feeling, but I do care, and let her know that, and she can't get rid of me. I'm there if she wants me, and if not, then I will support that too.
And ask her what she needs from you.
Yeah.
Well, I always want to be asked at least.
All right. Well, thank you, Kristen.
That's tough. I feel for you.
Thank you.
Which is what this was all about. And you feel for her, and we all feel for each other. And this really is what the world in 2022 needs right now. So thank you for being part of the healing that the world needs. Or the self-love, or the love. Anyone else? Okay. Well, then I bow to you, and I'll talk to you guys next month. Practice your four steps. Don't wait like Michael did for me to
thanks
threaten you. If you don't do it for yourself, do it for me. At least do it for me. Do it for my next book. So we can get this out there to more people.
Thank you.
Okay. I actually have a question.
Okay.